I'm Martin Zender. This is the Revelation series. I'm going to go back now to Ezekiel chapter 37. In the valley of the dry bones, prophesying centuries ago, Ezekiel was that God would take a people whose expectation was completely dried up and he will put life into them. These bones are the whole house of Israel. That was Ezekiel 37, verse 11. And they say, our bones are dried up, our hope has perished, we are completely cut off. Verse 12, therefore prophesy and say, thus says the Lord God, behold, I will open your graves and cause you to come up out of your graves, my people, and I will bring you into the land of Israel. We're going to see this happening. If the snatching away doesn't happen on September 23rd, the true one, and again, I'll explain to you very soon here why it's possible that it could happen on that day. Not because of anything internally in Revelation 12 or Micah chapter 5 or even Ezekiel or Isaiah. No. But because of, I'll give you the verse right now. You can look at it for yourself and see if you can figure it out. Romans 11:25. Paul says, callousness on part on Israel has come until the complement of the nations may be entering. Okay, back to Ezekiel chapter 37. Therefore prophesy, thus says the Lord, I will open your graves, and my people bring you to the land of Israel. Then you will know that I am the Lord. Then you will know that I am the Lord, because the majority, as I said yesterday, surrounding you, don't know that he is the Lord. It's almost like Job says, I heard of you, but now I see you. And how did Job come to this realization? Job is kind of typical here. I can see him as a pattern of those who are in Israel who are about to come to a realization of the truth of the circumcision gospel. Then you will know that I am the Lord. Then you will know. When they stop playing at miracles. And I will include the Pentecostal camp in the group, who have so many Israelite traits. And I failed to mention two traits of Israel yesterday. I will bring to your attention now. Number one, signs and wonders. And the Pentecostal church, they're hot for signs and wonders. That's all they care about. It's all they care about. They want to see a manifestation of the Spirit of God. And if one doesn't show up, they'll fake it. They love it so much. Their faith depends on things happening. If things don't happen, they fall away because they're not in love with Christ. They're in love with stuff happening. Number two, Paul says in, I believe it's Romans 2:14, because of you, the name of God is blasphemed among the nations. He's saying this concerning the Jews. Therefore, if you see a people who are naming the name of God, yet they are causing the name of God to be dragged through the mud and blasphemed throughout the rest of the world, there's your Israelites. There's your Israelites. Forget genealogies. I don't need genealogies. I need to look at traits. And I look at people who take the name of the Lord in vain. They take it, but it's not only in vain, but they are actually driving the true God from the minds of people. The minds of people to whom they purport to teach never see the mind of God, because they're presenting a false God and a false Christ. And the name of God is, the true name of God is blasphemed. If that's God, we don't want him, people say on the heels of Israelite teaching. And today the Christians are passing along this same poison. Then you will know I am the Lord when I have opened your graves and caused you to come up out of your graves. When I have opened your graves. I think that when begins on September 23rd with this sign. It's got to start sometime. And we're nearly 6,000 years from Adam. We are in the year 5989, according to the calculations of some smart people who like numbers and who like math. Verse 14, I will put my spirit within you. This is the new covenant. And you will come to life, and I will place you on your own land. This is the new covenant. God promised Israel a certain land and no other land, and that is the land of Israel. Then you will know, again, then you will know that I, the Lord, have spoken and done it. They will know that the Lord has spoken. Right now, they don't realize that. So The bones are figurative, and therefore the graves are figurative. In my mind, the graves are the churches today. These are the graves. You do not have a Methodist church on the corner of Elm and Main Street. You have a grave. You do not have a Catholic church on First Avenue. You have a grave. You do not have a Baptist church catty corner from you. It's a grave. You do not have a Pentecostal church at the strip mall. You have a grave. These are all tombs where dead people live. This is the fodder. This becomes the picking ground for God to bring out his people. Because he's not starting from scratch in the sense that he's going to go to some Aborigine tribe or some people living in darkness in the deepest jungles of Africa who are doing human sacrifices. And he's not going to take the 144,000 from that group. How could you possibly think that or say that? He's taking them from Israel. He's taking them from Abraham's stock. There's simply not enough people visible today in Israel, remnants of the house of Judah, of Abrahamic stock. Where are they? I've told you where I think they are. The graves are the churches today and the dead religion. It is from here that God raises his people, where he rattles them. Ezekiel heard a rattling when these pieces began coming together and fills them with spirit in startling measures. The filling of the spirit will be in startling measures. It will be noticeable. This is nothing less than the dawn of the new covenant. If you want to know, I'm actually referencing my own words here from ZWTF, Volume 5, Issue 36, article titled, The People of the Current Era. It's Romans Part 100. I'm commenting upon Chapter 11, Verses 1 through 5. This fits perfectly the topic of the day here, which is what's going to happen on September 23rd. And how will God prepare for the inauguration of the kingdom? And where will the people come from who will be the 144,000 and the vast throng? Do I know some of them? Yes, you do. You know a lot of them. This is the house of Israel, not the house of Judah, that exists in secret. It exists not knowing of its own existence. With these, God begins the new covenant. The house of Judah is yet in Jerusalem. We're not talking about the house of Judah again. Ezekiel 37 is about the house of Israel. The house of Judah says, we see, so therefore it's still blind. The house of Judah stuffs prayers into cracks of a wall mistakenly assumed to be a remnant of Herod's temple, but which is actually a remnant of the fortress Antonia of the Romans. This is the hidden Israel. The Israel that God will spring upon the world. And it's going to be a shock when these people come forth. Officially, it's going to be a shock. I believe they're going into the wilderness for 3.5 years. To prepare them to go through the tribulation. And we're going to get back into a line by line analysis of Revelation chapter 12. That's why you're here for the Revelation series. And I'm going to get a line-by-line analysis of Revelation 12 tied in again with Micah. And I'll solidify this. And what I'm bringing forth now is fleshing it out. I'm giving you practical nuts and bolts information of where these people are coming from, what they're going to be doing. So this is the hidden Israel, the Israel that God's going to spring on the world, shock everybody with. It's this Israel that will be called from the four winds, from all four corners of the world, from every nation, every peoples, every tongue, and brought to Jerusalem, or the environs of Jerusalem, to form ecclesias, groups of people in the final years of Millennium 6. And they will be, the cream among them will be co-administrators of a kingdom, right along with Peter, James, John, David, Abraham, and the Messiah himself, who will be the chief priest according to the order of Melchizedek. Now, this is a huge passage I'm bringing you right now. This is Isaiah chapter 43, verses 4 through 10. It reiterates this beautiful truth that God is not leaving himself short, that God has a people who are now prepared. It's a staging area right now. The churches, the Pentecostal church, the Baptist church, this is a staging area of apostasy, of death, of death. What else fits the prophecy of Ezekiel? That there's death. He's calling a people out of death, not out of life. He's not calling a people out of death. And I remind you that it's still the house of Israel. The death is the house of Israel. The death is not some foreign tribe from Africa or some Chinese group, somebody from a different folk stem. No, it's Israel stock. Here's Isaiah 43, verses 4 through 10. Since you are precious in my sight, since you are honored and I love you, I will give other men in your place and other people in exchange for your life. Do not fear, for I am with you. I will bring your offspring from the east and gather you from the west. I will say to the north, give them up, and to the south, do not hold them back. Bring my sons from afar and my daughters from the ends of the earth, everyone who is called by my name and whom I have created for my glory, whom I have formed, even whom I have made. Israel is God's witness. Bring out the people who are blind, even though they have eyes, and the deaf, even though they have ears. All the nations have gathered together so that the people may be assembled. Who among them can declare this and proclaim to us the former things? Let them present their witnesses that they may be justified, or let them hear and say, it is true. You are my witnesses, declares the Lord, and my servants whom I have chosen, so that you may know and believe me and understand that I am he. Unquote. Oh my God, can you believe that passage? This is it. This explains what's going to happen in the final years of Millennium 6 with Israel. Every detail is here. What more could you possibly want? I've read it without comment, which is probably surprising to many of you. Now I'm going to read it with comment. Isaiah 43, verses 4 through 10, quote, since you are precious in my sight, comment, Israel is still precious in his sight. He disciplines those whom he loves. And he's never stopped loving Israel, even while he puts them through the fires of affliction. Since you are precious in my sight, since you are honored, and I love you, honored. How are they honored? You know, for this, I really need to go to Romans 11 again, because I'll probably be referencing Romans 11 as I go through this with you. God says that Israel is still beloved in spite of everything. In verse 28 of Romans 11, as to the evangel, that is Paul's evangel, indeed, they are enemies. God cast them away, Paul says, so that he could bring a new evangel to you. And while they are in apostasy, he is now, quote, free, unquote, to go to the nations with a different message. Yet as to choice, they are beloved because of the fathers, for unregretted are the graces and the calling of God. Unregretted. God does not call them and then regret that he made them and then dissolve them or annihilate them, never to be raised again. Ezekiel 37 is telling us just the opposite, and Isaiah 43 is telling us just the opposite. As to the evangel, indeed, they are enemies because of you. Yet as to choice, God's choice, They are beloved because of the fathers, because of, I believe, the promise God made to the fathers, specifically to Abraham. And God is not slack, according to Peter. He is not slack concerning his promises. It's either 1 or 2 Peter 3, 8, where God reiterates the truth that a thousand years are as one day in his sight. And so, even though the time has marched on, the passage of time is gone and gone and gone, God does not forget. For unregretted are the graces and the calling of God, for even as you were once stubborn toward God, yet now are shown mercy at their stubbornness. Thus these also are now stubborn. This is what I've been telling you this week. These also are now stubborn. And they're still stubborn. It's the valley of dry bones, scattered on the surface. And Paul's going to get to the grand truth that God locks up altogether in stubbornness. It's from a field of stubbornness that he raises people for his own name, who will become zealous for his name because he really violently puts his spirit in them. He has to do it violently. He has to violate their free wills. We know no one has a free will. For even as you were once stubborn toward God, yet now were shown mercy at their stubbornness, thus these also are now stubborn to this mercy of yours. They hate the fact that God's doing such amazing thing with you. And your friends in church hate the fact that you claim to have something greater than they have. You claim to have a light brighter than their light. You claim to have a destination better than theirs. They hate it. They're stubborn towards the grace God is now showing you, just as you were once stubborn as a member of the nations when God was ministering to Israel as the apple of his eye. That now they may be shown mercy. They are going to be shown mercy. God is going to move. And it's about time. And it's such a great thing. It's about time, and it's such a great thing. And so why wouldn't there be a great sign? Revelation 12:1. Why wouldn't there be a great sign in heaven advertising, announcing the beginning of this thing? There is. More commentary on Isaiah tomorrow.